Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Velocity of Content. It's Friday, April 15th, 2022. Today, as we do each week, we check in with Publishers Weekly on news from the world of books and publishing. Andrew Albanese, PW Senior Writer, joins me with his reporting and editorial analysis. Welcome back to the program, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
Halfway through April, Andrew, and sales data for publishers from the first quarter of 2022 has begun to trickle in. And with that, PW has declared the book boom of the past 2 years is over.
Yeah, it's a rather ominous headline, isn't it? But in reality, we shouldn't be so alarmed, and it's really not surprising, and it's not as bad as the headline makes it sound. But it isn't great news either, right? So what is the news? Well, the news is that NPD BookScan's quarterly numbers are in, and they show that unit sales of print books fell 8.9% in the first quarter, which ended on April 2nd. And this, of course, over the same period in 2021. Now, 8.9% is a pretty big number, and especially after the steady growth we've seen over the last 2 years. But again, none of this is unexpected. Remember, first quarter sales in 2021 were crazy. They soared 29.2% over the first period of 2020. So while sales are down from a year ago, they're still up about 16% over the first quarter of 2020. And the 183 million or so unit sales in the first quarter of 2022 is still well above the 156 million units that sold in the first quarter of 2019, going back to the year before the pandemic hit.
Weeks ago, Andrew, you reported that the pace of sales from 2021 was not expected to continue, and what would be key to watch for was just how much sales growth publishers might have to give back this year. So far, though, the numbers are still pretty strong.
Exactly. And that's exactly how I look at all this, because remember, less than a decade ago, publishing units were declining slightly, right? And then they turned a corner and the industry started showing some positive growth, like, you know, 1-3% a year, which for a mature industry like the book business is about what you'd expect. But then in the last 2 years, the publishers crammed about a decade's worth of growth into like 7 quarters, right? Not even a full 2 years. Now, I don't think anyone saw that coming, right? And we all have our pandemic theories, but we may never know exactly why book sales have spiked so dramatically over the last 2 years. But the point is, you know, we all expected sales to cool off at some point because that growth rate was phenomenal. The question I've always had is, where are things going to settle in? Where are they going to land? And the fact is, in the first quarter, they've landed well above where we'd likely be had we not had a pandemic. Now, that pandemic, of course, has claimed millions of lives, throwing our lives into chaos. And I'm sure publishers would gladly give back all the excess growth of the last 2 years if we could have avoided this whole catastrophe, right? Obviously, things don't work like that. And we can take it as a positive, I think, that reading, for whatever reason, has clearly come out ahead. And a couple, maybe two or three closing thoughts here. This growth comes amid another trend we've been talking about for over a year now, and that is supply chain challenges and now a printing crunch. You know, the publishers have been able to manage this all so effectively and see this kind of growth so effectively is still, in my estimation, you know, just not getting the proper attention and admiration it deserves, because it really is just remarkable. And the other thing is that this growth appears to be set up to continue, I think, for publishers. And I say that because, you know, one of the key figures in the NPD report is adult fiction. And for years, we talked about the worrying decline in adult fiction sales. Well, that has turned around. And adult fiction, even in this down quarter of 2022, is still showing growth. In fact, it was the one part of publishing sales that really showed good growth in the first quarter of 2022. Now, where that goes in the future, I don't know. But, you know, tells me that more people are reading. Tells me that more people are reading for pleasure, too. And of course, as you know, the lingering question I have after the pandemic is whether the publishing industry has, you know, selling more books basically to its existing customers, or whether it's meaningfully brought in more readers, you know, actually created new customers. And I think the evidence we're starting to see now, at least anecdotally, is, well, both. But in fact, almost certainly the industry has won back some readers perhaps that went away and found some more time to read during the pandemic, and in many cases, minted some new ones. So are sales going to continue to cool through 2022? Are they going to heat up again? Not exactly sure where the rest of 22 is going to take us in terms of sales, but I think I can safely say that the book business has certainly leveled up from where it was in 2019, even if it can't maintain the torrid pace of 2021.
In Maryland this week, state attorneys told a federal judge they would not contest a preliminary injunction barring that state's library ebook law from being enforced. That move paves the way for a permanent injunction to be entered and effectively spells the end for the law.
That's right. Maryland's library ebook law is dead, effectively dead. In a court filing this week, Maryland Attorney General Brian E. Frosch said that the state would present no new evidence in a legal challenge filed by the Association of American Publishers, and that will effectively allow the court's recently issued preliminary injunction blocking the law to stand, and it paves the way for that preliminary injunction to be converted into a permanent injunction. Now, in the filing, Maryland state attorneys asked Judge Deborah L. Boardman to resist the permanent injunction. They say that a less burdensome declaratory judgment would suffice. The AAP now has until April 25th to respond to that. And I'm not sure it really matters how the court ultimately decides to dispose of the law. Maryland attorneys note that the law was never invoked. And because the state is not enforcing the Maryland law and has no intention to do so, there's no threat. So the court really doesn't need to go through the motions of resorting to what they call the coercive powers of a permanent injunction to compel the state's compliance. Now, again, it doesn't really change much. The law is dead. And if I'm the AAP and I've come this far, why not get an injunction on the books, right? So we'll see what the AAP has to say and what happens next. But the end of this version of the law in Maryland anyway could be done. And it could be done as simple very soon, within a week or two, with the court issuing a declarative judgment, possibly in early May. To remind our listeners, the end comes after federal judge Deborah Boardman on February 16th ruled that Maryland's library ebook law, as its critics contended, is preempted by the Federal Copyright Act, specifically holding that the threat of civil and criminal penalties for noncompliance with the act amounted to a, and I'll quote her here, a forced transaction that would effectively strip publishers of their exclusive right to distribute. That law, of course, was first introduced in January of 2021, and the law in Maryland would have required any publisher offering to license an electronic literary product to consumers in the state to also offer to license the content to libraries on reasonable terms. And the bill passed the Maryland General Assembly unanimously on March 10th. It went into law on January 1 of this year, and of course, it was never invoked. The Association of American Publishers filed suit on December 9th of last year, however, arguing that the law infringed on the exclusive rights granted to publishers. And a week later, on December 16th, they asked for this preliminary injunction, which Judge Boardman then granted, effectively killing the law.
So you emphasize this version of the law. Do you think new legislation could be coming?
Well, I know it is under discussion. I don't have anything to report on that yet. But look, let's be honest and clear and direct about what all of this means. And first and foremost, I don't think any of this really means much in practice for publishers and for libraries. For one, as I've said before, the law itself in practice doesn't really change much because, as the AAP even admitted in its filings, pretty much all of its members are in compliance with the law. Maryland librarians have said that they're not going to challenge existing terms under the law. So unless there was a new embargo policy or a super high crazy price increase, the law was never not going to be invoked and the status quo was probably just going to hold. Now, in its suit, the AAP says it viewed the law as a threat to the supremacy of copyright law, and the court fully agreed with that proposition. The law as written, which was clearly written sort of hastily and in very brief terms, was not terribly well executed, and it ended up running afoul of copyright law. At the same time, this was not, as some of the AAP legal documents would suggest, an unprovoked attack on copyright, right? This was not the library community seeking to undermine copyright. They were not trying to get something for nothing, as some have argued. This law emerged after a decade of tension in the digital library market, with libraries long complaining of unsustainable, non-negotiated high prices and restrictions. And more to the point, specifically, this law emerged as a direct response to Macmillan's now abandoned 2019 embargo on frontlist ebook titles, which prompted numerous appeals from the library community to both federal and state legislators to help them protect basic access to digital works in libraries. So in many respects, I view the conclusion of the legal action in Maryland and the end of this law in Maryland is perhaps the last gasp, the last action related to the backlash against Macmillan's embargo policy. But again, this case was never really about copyright. I really want to stress that. I mean, the law ended up running afoul of copyright, and that proved to be its undoing. This was always about digital equity. And I think it's important to keep that in mind because the tension remains. And unless publishers and libraries can come together and deal with that issue with digital equity, I do expect the library community is going to continue to push for equitable terms at both the state and the federal levels. And look, this is not some Gordian knot. I've said this before. It's not even most publishers, right? Most indies work with libraries on terms that libraries consider fair. And of the big five publishers, librarians are actually fine with one of them, HarperCollins, which hasn't fundamentally changed its model except to add more options since 2010. And look, we've learned a lot over the last 2 years about digital lending and library sales. So let's hope that, you know, we can get libraries and publishers together without legislators, without lawyers, without lobbyists and trade associations. And let's just get this figured out.
Last week, you shared an upbeat assessment of the London Book Fair, albeit one reported from afar. Maybe, though, you were lucky to have remained in New York City, as it appears some fairgoers returned home with a special souvenir. A case of COVID-19.
Yeah. Wow. Quite a few, actually. Yeah. And you can read the story on the PW site. It's written by our partners in the UK Book Brunch. And they reported that, you know, the crowds at the London Book Fair, which we heard too, was largely maskless. And there were a lot of hugs and a lot of drinks, shall we say, with people and a lot of parties. And I have to tell you, anecdotally, nearly all, and I'm very close to 100% of my friends who were in London, who I spoke to, came back with a COVID-19 infection. Most of them after they got home, thankfully. Only one person that I know of was actually stuck in London for a few days. The good news, of course, is that the variant that they came back with appears to be pretty mild. They've all recovered. They're feeling better. And I honestly don't really know what else to say at this point because the world appears determined to move on. The London Book Fair organizers insist that they had the proper protocols in place. And, you know, I did hear lots of people, even people who came back with a case of COVID, saying how good it was to be back together as a community in London. So all of this is to say we'll see what Frankfurt looks like and what the future holds for book fairs and conferences going forward. But I do think it's fair to say that there's probably no going back, and COVID-19 is just going to be part of our lives.
Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly senior writer, thanks for joining me on the program today.
My pleasure, as always.
Coming up on the next podcast from CCC, research forward organizations today turn to data and use AI-enabled data mining technology to accelerate discovery and decision-making. Yet this data boom also raises critical questions about data reliability and public policy concerns over privacy and equity. Sonia Shake is the George Gerbner Postdoctoral Fellow at the Annenberg School for Communication at the University of Pennsylvania. Dr. Shake researches how individuals and teams use AI-enabled and automated technology to make decisions, interact, and perform. Her research suggests that the success of data-driven decision-making depends heavily on how much trust there is in the technology used.
I have identified some reasons which affect public trust for AI and data-driven tools. And right now, the landscape is very murky. We don't really know if public trusts AI and data-driven tools. And that is because of several reasons. So first, I found in my research that perceptions of technology's terminology, like if we say algorithm versus machine learning versus AI, it affects the extent to which people are willing to place their trust in it. And this is interesting because we tend to, as academics and researchers, often conflate terms like algorithms, machine learning, AI, but in the public mind, it affects their perceptions of trust. And then another thing is that some researchers have found that decision types really affect if people are willing to take a technology and let them make decisions for them. So for example, technologies used to do make hiring decisions are not as trusted, but technologies which can make low stake decisions, let's say, manage a database, for example, are trusted more often.
Data directions coming on the next CCC podcast. Our producer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. You can subscribe to the program wherever you go for podcasts, and please do follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. I'm Christopher Keneally. Thanks for listening to this Velocity of Content podcast from CCC.